Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Things aren't always as they appear, and some bombshells might be hiding in plain sight. I'm Katie Bilotti, and this is Found Objects, a storytelling history podcast. Welcome in, everyone. Welcome back to Found Objects History Podcast with me, Katie Bilotti. I am so glad you guys are here. Thank you for all of the kind feedback and words about last week's episode and all of my episodes. Honestly, any kind remarks and reposts or just stories you guys are posting, showing you listening to the podcast, it means so much to me. I'm so glad that people are enjoying it and just are looking forward to these episodes every week where I share stories that interest me from different nooks and crannies in history. So thank you guys for being here. As always, we have an Instagram account, Found Objects Podcast, over on Instagram. Give it a follow. I always post when the new episodes drop. And not only that, but I also post slideshows showing images from the episode. So if you ever are wondering like what this person looks like or, you know, this specific moment in history, just some visual aids for the episodes, check out the Instagram. I always post a little slideshow of images that are relevant to the episode because this is an audio-only podcast. It's sometimes it's helpful to see, to literally see what things looked like in the various times of history that I'm talking about. So definitely check that out. And I guess without further ado, I will introduce today's subject matter, which I'm sure you saw in the title, but today we are debunking Titanic conspiracy theories. I love a good conspiracy theory, depending on what it is, but I like going down a rabbit hole and trying to figure out, you know, is this thing possible? Is this, you know, theory something that could be actual fact? Like, I love looking through specifically on like Reddit and other places, conspiracy theories in general. And the Titanic is one that has so many conspiracy theories attached to it. And so today in this episode, when I was first like thinking this up, I talked to my researcher, Sarah, and I'm like, how about we try to debunk the best we can these conspiracy theories that I'm seeing everywhere? Like, how about we go through what actually happened and try to piece it together and see if these things are actually legit or, you know, just kind of just look into it a bit more. And we uncovered some very interesting stuff. And so, yeah, if you are interested in the Titanic or just anything history related, if you're listening to this podcast, I guarantee you will like this episode today. So without further ado, let's go back in time to the times of the Titanic sinking and all things related, and I'll see you guys there. So before we go back to 1912, which is when the Titanic sunk, let's talk a bit about present day. So TikTok, specifically. TikTok, social media platforms in general, but I see this the most on TikTok, the spread of misinformation. And, you know, for as many positive things that TikTok has brought to us, honestly, like I've learned so much from TikTok and I overall am just entertained by it and I enjoy going on there, even though it is such a time suck. Like I spend hours on there and I think it's been 15 minutes. So I definitely limit my time on there. But when I am perusing, especially like the history channels on there and whatnot, I do learn a lot, but there is this sense of, you know, what is true and what is false. Like when I'm watching something, I tend to believe everything I hear and see. And there's a danger in that, right? Because there's some people out there that either they do it maliciously or just because they don't know, and they tend to spread misinformation or kind of, you know, embellish where it's not necessary. And, you know, things kind of tend to spiral. And for example, in a recent study of young Americans who use TikTok for more than an hour a day, I fall into that category, 17% of those surveyed couldn't say definitively that the Earth is round, according to the Reboot Foundation. The inherent issue here, with that statistic is that kids are taught that the earth is round. But with the frequency of watching videos over and over again from the other side of things, they start questioning it. And this was actually said by Helen Lee Borges, who started the Reboot Foundation to help fight misinformation. She said that the group saw that the longer young adults were on TikTok, the more likely that they believed what they saw. Misinformation to this degree is harmful to impressionable minds, to kids specifically, whose minds are like sponges, you know? And it doesn't just stop with the earth being round. If you spend any time on TikTok in 2023 or 2024, you may have seen a video come across your For You page that claimed that the Titanic never actually sank at all, despite photographic and video evidence to the contrary. And of course, this opened Pandora's box for conspiracy theories that supported the wild claim or provided alternative endings to the Titanic's ultimate demise. The internet is a cesspool of information, so we're gonna set the record straight today, starting with what happened on that fateful night of April 14th, 1912. So a little Cliff Notes version of what happened, if you haven't listened to my past episodes on the Titanic. The RMS Titanic was a British passenger liner operated by the White Star Line, and at the time of her maiden voyage, she was the largest ship afloat and was considered unsinkable due to her advanced safety features, including watertight compartments and remotely activated watertight doors. Titanic set sail from Southampton, England to New York City on April 10th, 1912, with stops at Cherbourg, France, and Queenstown, which is now Cove, Ireland. The Titanic carried 2,224 passengers and crew members, and the ship boasted luxury accommodations for the wealthy with opulent first-class cabins and facilities. However, the majority of passengers on the ship were immigrants in third class, hoping to start a new life in America. If you guys remember Titanic the movie, Jack, from the 1997 James Cameron Titanic classic, and Jack in the movie won his two tickets aboard the Titanic during a lucky game of poker, and he thought his life was starting all over again, becoming anew. And, you know, we all kind of know how that goes with the door of it all, and, you know, perhaps he might have been better off if he had lost that poker game. But the ship was under command of Captain Edward Smith, a seasoned White Star Line veteran. On the night of April 14th, 1912, the Titanic was cruising through the North Atlantic at a speed of 22.5 knots. Despite multiple warnings of icebergs from other ships, Titanic maintained her speed. At 11:40 p.m., lookout Frederick Fleet spotted an iceberg directly in the ship's path. He rang the warning bell and telephoned the bridge. First Officer William Murdoch ordered the ship to turn around to the starboard, left, hard, and the engines to reverse, but by then, it was too late. The iceberg scraped along the starboard side, creating a series of holes below the waterline. And this damage caused the first five of the Titanic's 16 watertight compartments to flood. The ship's designers had planned for her to stay afloat with up to four compartments flooded. But like I just said, there were five compartments that were flooded. So the fifth compartment's flooding sealed her fate. Titanic's bow began to sink and water poured from one compartment to the next, exacerbating the flooding. As the situation became clear, what was going to happen, they needed to get out of there, the crew began to launch lifeboats. However, the ship carried only 20 lifeboats, enough for about half of the passengers and crew. There were some, 2,200 people on board this ship. They only had space for half. This was in compliance with outdated maritime safety regulations. The evacuation was chaotic, with many lifeboats launched only partially filled due to lack of training and the belief that the ship was indeed unsinkable. Titanic's distress signals were received by several ships, but the nearest, the RMS Carpathia, was about 58 miles away. Carpathia steamed in at full speed to try to help rescue, but would not arrive until around 4 a.m. Meanwhile, passengers and crew faced a harrowing choice: stay on board the sinking ship or brave the icy waters of the Atlantic. Titanic's stern lifted out of the water as the front, as the bow, continued to sink down. Around 2:20 a.m. on April 15th, 1912, the ship broke apart and sank into the ocean. over 1,500 people perished in the disaster, either in the sinking or in the freezing water. The 705 survivors were rescued by Carpathia when it eventually arrived and taken to New York. The sinking of the Titanic led to widespread shock and outrage. Inquiries were held in the UK and the US, leading to significant changes in maritime laws and safety practices. The International Convention for the Safety of Life at Sea was established in 1914, mandating lifeboat space for all passengers and continuous radio watches, among other measures. So, you know, the Titanic really paved the way for a lot of things to change in terms of maritime safety, but it is sad that it had to go down the way it did for that to happen, obviously. The wreck of the Titanic was discovered in 1985, lying on the ocean floor at a depth of about 12,500 feet. So it sunk down low. Like, I'm trying to picture my own boat at home. My dad has a boat that he loves, like, as his third daughter, I swear. And sometimes, like, I think the deepest we'll be in sometimes is, like, 30 feet. And that's, like, in the middle of, like, the channel. Like, of, it's, like, you know it's going to be deep there. But, like, that isn't even a fraction of how deep this ship sank to. Like, 12,500 feet. The discovery reignited public interest in the story, leading to numerous books, documentaries, and of course, conspiracy theories. Okay, so the first conspiracy theory that we're going to crack open involves a man named J.P. Morgan, who you might recognize as being an investment banker, American, you know, financial guy who dominated corporate finance on Wall Street throughout the Gilded Age and the Progressive Era. And obviously, I mean, you might know someone who works at J.P. Morgan today. Like, it is still such a, what would you call it? Like, an institution. Yeah. And so he was, like, that guy during this time period. And essentially, people that believe in this theory or that kind of got this theory going claim that J.P. Morgan wanted to eliminate his rivals who were aboard the Titanic. And these rivals supposedly included prominent businessmen like Jacob Astor, who we did an episode on, Madeline Astor, that episode, a few back in time, so definitely check that one out, Isidore Strauss and Benjamin Guggenheim. And these guys all opposed J.P. Morgan's plans for the Federal Reserve, which was a central, or is, a central banking system that was established in the U.S. in 1913. So the theory hinges on the fact that J.P. Morgan had originally planned to sail on the Titanic, but he changed his mind shortly before it took off. Yet, it doesn't offer any explanation for how he caused the ship to hit an iceberg. Like, how does he do that? You know, how does he, like, coerce someone? Or how do you even know where the icebergs are at this point in history? How can you track things like that, really? So it doesn't really offer any explanation for how he caused the ship to actually hit an iceberg and kill over 1,500 people, let alone the three guys he supposedly intended to die. So while it's technically possible that J.P. Morgan could have tampered with the ship, I mean, he actually owned the International Mercantile Marine Company, which was a company that owned the White Star Line. So the RMS Titanic was a part of the White Star Line of ships. So he essentially owned the thing that owned that. So he could have gotten in there somehow or hired someone and gotten them clearance to tamper with the ship. But there's no evidence of that ever happening. And to top it off, the theory kind of hinges on the fact that J.P. Morgan wanted to kill these three guys because they opposed the creation of the Federal Reserve, which is what he wanted. But there's really no evidence that Astor and Guggenheim didn't agree with this or that they had any sort of position on it. And Strauss himself, one of the three guys, actually supported it. So there's really no evidence that, you know, they were needed to be taken out anyway. So this is kind of, I think, just literally a conspiracy theory that doesn't really carry much weight. But I've seen that all over the place, that there's this, like, ulterior motive and that someone wanted to sink the Titanic and somehow, you know, figured out how to hit an iceberg, you know, from afar. So that's number one. Now let's discuss the notion that perhaps the Titanic didn't sink from hitting an iceberg. A lot of people think that there was another reason why the Titanic sunk. What if it was instead struck by a German submarine? You may be thinking, Katie, newsflash, the start of World War I was still 2 years away at this point when the Titanic sunk. You'd be right if you said that, but several survivors, including both passengers and crew members, testified that they never felt any impact or heard any sound when the collision occurred, suggesting it was minor in nature. However, they reported having heard four explosions deep in the bowels of the Titanic after it had scraped the iceberg. Could these conceivably have been torpedoes launched by a nearby German submarine? So people are saying that there really was no iceberg, and that maybe there was another way that this could have happened to the ship, because you'd think if you scraped the side of an iceberg that you'd hear that, right? That there would be like some screeching noise against the hull of the ship or the siding of the ship. But passengers are saying they didn't hear a thing until after they heard, you know, these strikes, four explosions deep in the bowels of the Titanic that would be underwater after it had scraped. So, moreover, a number of survivors huddled in lifeboats observed a searchlight in the distance, encouraging them that a rescue vessel was approaching. And this light had been attributed to the Californian, another ship, but that ship's captain, Stanley Lord, insisted that it was not their light, that there was another vessel between his and the Titanic. Indeed, there's records that state that his ship was actually stuck in a colossal ice field and maintained to remain there until daylight. Several sailors on watch asserted that they'd witnessed an unidentified vessel approximately 5 to 6 miles away from the Titanic until 2 a.m., possibly a submarine that had surfaced to assess the damage it had caused, if it was indeed one of these ships that fired off, you know, these undersea missiles, torpedoes, as they're called. And so they came up to like assess what they've done, and then they go back down and disappear. So for the record, this was not the Carpathia, which arrived on the scene later to assist in rescuing survivors. So people are saying, you know, several sailors say that they witnessed this unidentified vessel. And it could have been a German submarine, as their U-boat technology was highly perfected by that time, and their subs were scanning the North Atlantic at that time. The sub may have deliberately targeted the luxury liner or possibly accidentally collided with it. However, this theory is completely based on, you know, a conjecture, a few witness testimonies that can be twisted to align with this theory. Many people at the time were actively looking for reasons to instigate war with Germany as tensions rose. So this could simply be a telephone incident of, you know, one person saying one thing to another person, and, you know, then stories being twisted to fit. What's it called? Confirmation bias is the psychological term where you want something to be true so badly that you look for every possible shred of evidence that could support your theory. So that could be why people are running with this idea. Or they just wanted something crazier than just an iceberg. Like they were like, this is too simple of a reason for a huge unsinkable vessel to go down like that. There has to be some other reason for that. Like, it was just hard for people to wrap their minds around the fact that an iceberg was the reason for so much tragedy. And the more likely explanation for this conspiracy is that the explosions heard were literally the ship breaking in half. Another passenger, Charles Stengel, reported hearing four sharp explosions when the bow and the stern ripped apart, as famously depicted in the movie The Titanic. So when the ship literally, like I said, the bow went down, then the stern, from the weight, snapped off the back of the vessel. And so that could be the explosions that were heard. So the theories that the Titanic sinking was caused by something other than an iceberg don't stop there with the mysterious German submarines. Some actually speculate that a fire in the hull of the ship contributed to its demise. So a little background. The Titanic needed coal to power its engines, deck equipment, and other machinery on board the ship. And the ship's coal bunkers stored about 6,600 tons of coal for its round trip from Southampton to New York. And the ship would burn between 600 and 850 tons of coal each day. So that's a ton of coal, literally. Hundreds of stokers, so these guys that were hired to shovel the coal by hand into the furnaces, were employed. However, not many people know this, but from the moment the Titanic began her first sea trials and set sail for Southampton, coal in one of the ship's bunkers was burning in a smoldering fire. Fire was detected in the coal bunker in Southampton 8 days after they'd set sail. In the 1912 book, The Sinking of the Titanic and Great Sea Disasters, John Dilley, one of the ship's firemen, testified that the stokers were beginning to get alarmed over it, but the officers told us to keep our mouths shut. They didn't want to alarm the passengers. Throughout the entire journey from Southampton after detecting the fire, a crew of firemen were assigned to put out the fire by removing the coal from the bunker into the boilers or furnaces. And it's known, I guess, that coal removal is the best way to deal with smoldering. And I actually learned that smoldering, I'd actually never thought about the word smoldering and like what it actually means. I've thought about smoldering in the context of makeup for so long, but when you hear a smoldering fire, it's a slow, flameless, and persistent type of combustion that happens when oxygen reacts with solid fuels like timber at low temperatures, and they can last for days or months and produce a lot of thick smoke that may contain toxic chemicals like carbon monoxide and cyanide. So not great, and it will affect the materials around it, like warping metal and things like that. In the 2017 documentary Titanic, The New Evidence, author and journalist Shannon Maloney advances the theory that this fire was instrumental in Titanic's sinking. So this journalist kind of proposed this theory and was like, hey guys, have we ever thought about this? Two rarely examined photographs taken of the ship before it left Belfast reportedly show 30-foot smudges on the starboard side of the ship, which Maloney believes are burn marks. He proposes that the smoldering coal made the hull and one of the bulkheads brittle. So if you think about it, you know, if an iceberg were to scrape something that's already brittle, not going to bode well, right? So, however, no other photos of the ship show this mark, only this one photo. As for the fire itself, Maurice Clark, Titanic safety officer, told the official inquiry that it's not an uncommon thing to have these small fires in the bunkers. The fire would have needed to be so much worse to destroy the water tightness of the bulkhead. Hence, the prevailing belief is that the iceberg did enough damage on its own to sink the ship. A fire may have accelerated this, Dave Hill, former honorary secretary of the British Titanic Society, told the New York Times in 2017, but he said, quote, in my view, the Titanic would have sunk anyways. However, the submarine attack and a fire in the hull are arguably more believable, though, than a curse. Yes, obviously I'm going to discuss a curse.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I love a good curse. Well, I don't love a good curse like put on me per se, but I like reading about them. So the wildest conspiracy theory that I've seen is that a mummy's curse single-handedly took down the Titanic. The story of the mummy goes that the princess of Amun-Ra lived some 1,500 years before Christ, BC. When she died, she was laid in an ornate wooden coffin and buried deep in a vault at Luxor on the banks of the Nile. In the late 1890s, four young Englishmen, all four very wealthy, were visiting the excavations at Luxor and were invited to buy an exquisitely fashioned mummy case containing the remains of Princess of Amun-Ra. The man who won and ultimately purchased the mummy case paid several thousand pounds and had the coffin taken to his hotel. A few hours later, he was seen walking out towards the desert, and he never returned. Very spooky. The next day, one of the remaining three men that also considered purchasing the mummy case was shot by an Egyptian servant accidentally. His arm was so severely wounded that it had to be amputated. The third man, who nearly purchased the mummy case, found out on his return home that the bank holding his entire life savings had failed. The fourth guy suffered a severe illness, lost his job, and was reduced to selling matches on the street. Nevertheless, the coffin reached England, causing many other misfortunes in its wake, where it was bought by a London businessman. After three of his family members had been injured in a road accident and his house was damaged by fire, the businessman donated it to the British Museum. As the coffin was being unloaded from a truck in the museum courtyard, the truck suddenly went into reverse and trapped a person, which sounds like a terrible, terrible thing to occur. Then, as the casket was being lifted up the stairs by two workmen, one of them fell and broke his leg. The other, apparently in perfect health, died randomly 2 days later. So once it was unloaded at the British Museum and it was installed in the Princess Room, trouble really started. The museum's night watchman frequently heard frantic hammering and sobbing from the coffin. Other exhibits in the room were also often kind of messed with at night. One watchman died on duty, making the other watchman want to quit. Cleaners refused to go near the coffin. And when a visitor, I don't know, trying to be funny or who knows why, flicked a dust cloth at the face painted on the coffin, kind of, you know, flicked this little, like, you know, handkerchief that he had at the coffin, his child died of measles soon afterwards. So everyone coming into contact with this coffin that held the princess remains and mummified remains, went through something really tough. Finally, the authorities had the mummy carried down to the basement, figuring it couldn't do any harm down there. Within 1 week, one of the helpers was seriously ill, and the supervisor of the move was found dead on his desk. By now, the papers had heard of it. A journalist photographer took a picture of the mummy case, and when he developed it, the painting on the coffin was of a horrifying human face. The photographer was said to have gone home then, locked his bedroom door, and shot himself. Soon afterwards, the museum sold the mummy to a private collector, and after continual misfortune and deaths, the owner banished it to the attic. A well-known authority on the supernatural and author, Madame Helena Blavatsky, visited the home where the mummified case was. She didn't know that it was there, but she felt something. When she walked in, she was seized with a shivering fit and searched the house for a source of the evil influence of incredible intensity that she was feeling, and she finally came up to the attic and found the mummy case. "Can you exorcise this evil spirit?" asked the owner of the house. She said, "There is no such thing as exorcism. Evil remains evil forever. Nothing can be done about it. I implore you to get rid of this evil as soon as possible." But no British museum would take the mummy. The fact that almost 20 people had been met with misfortune, disaster, or death from handling the casket in barely just 10 years, people were like, okay, we know this, we know what's going on here, we don't want anything to do with it. Eventually, a hard-headed American archaeologist who dismissed the happenings as quirks of circumstance paid a handsome price for the mummy and arranged for its removal to New York. So he wanted it shipped from where it was in England to New York. In April 1912, the new owner escorted its treasure aboard a sparkling new White Star liner about to make its maiden voyage to New York. As we know, that is the Titanic. So he put the mummy on the ship. On the night of April 14th, amid scenes of unprecedented horror, the Princess of Amun-Ra accompanied 1,500 passengers to their deaths at the bottom of the Atlantic. And of course we know this ship was the Titanic. So yeah, I have chills, honestly. Like, do we think a cursed mummy had something to do with this? And that's what I thought until I learned that there's a kicker to this story. There's something that needs to be said. No mummy, cursed or otherwise, like no mummy at all, was carried as cargo by the ill-fated Titanic. You know, they obviously kept very detailed records of everything that was brought on board in the cargo hold, and a mummy was not listed. So that's one thing. That's probably the biggest glaring issue with this story. But second of all, the story is logically inconsistent. One of the few names quoted in the piece is that of Helena Blavatsky, a well-known supernatural expert, author of the period, and we're told that the dreaded Princess of Amun-Ra that was in this, you know, that was mummified in this coffin was purchased in Luxor, Egypt by four foolish young Englishmen in the late 1890s, and they had been in possession of the mummy right before it was shipped on the Titanic. But these claims could not be true. Both of them could not be true because Helena Blavatsky died of influenza in 1891, but the Titanic's first and only voyage didn't take place until 1912. So she could not have you know, gone to this attic and spoken to the owner and told him to sell it, you know, there's no way that could have happened. Plus, when Charles Haas, president of the National Titanic Historical Society, gained access to the ship's cargo manifest, no mummy was listed, like I said, among the various random items. Surprise, surprise. He actually said, quote, "The cargo manifest throws those myths right out the window." Other experts have come to the same conclusion. No mummy. Least of all, one of the vengeful princess of Amun-Ra was shipped aboard the Titanic. So, no mummy, no crime, right? No body, no crime. No mummy, no crime. In fact, the mummy that I've been talking about, the princess of Amun-Ra, also called the priestess of Amun, kind of interchangeably, was actually not like a full coffin at all. It was actually just the coffin lid that has been discovered and has been featured in museum exhibits. So how did this curse, this tale of this curse, come about, you know, featuring a whole coffin with an actual mummy inside? How did we come up with this story? Because it's literally just a coffin lid, and I'll post the photo of it on our Instagram. So where did this story come from, and how did it get so widespread? So this ghost story was concocted around the turn of the century by two Englishmen named William Stead and Douglas Murray. Stead was a well-known journalist and editor, but he was also a believer in mysticism and spiritualism, who consulted mediums, investigated psychic phenomena, and published a related periodical. Much isn't known about Murray, the other guy. He's been described as an Egyptologist and as the man who shipped the mummy in question to London in the first place, although he was probably neither. We're not really sure what his deal was. But Stead and Murray, these two guys, came together and crafted an elaborate horror story about a mummy that was brought to England and set up in the drawing room of an acquaintance of theirs. So one of their friends, you know, and they'd witnessed this together, supposedly. And the morning after the mummy got there, they claimed everything breakable in the room was destroyed. The mummy was moved from room to room within the house because of this, but each move resulted in the same destruction of all of the breakable objects in each room. They claimed that wherever the mummy went, it brought sickness, death, and destruction to its owner. Sometime after Stead and Murray invented this mummy story, they were visiting the first Egyptian room of the British Museum. So that was part of the story that I told about how when the mummy was moved to the British Museum, all of these things happened, like this tourist, you know, his kid got measles and like all this stuff. So these two guys went to the British Museum, were in the first Egyptian room, and noticed this coffin lid of the priestess of Amun, or the princess of Amun-Ra, that they concocted. And they saw this coffin lid, and this kind of got their gears turning as to how they can embellish their story even more. And so they concocted another part of the story, another layer of the onion that was the story, that the look of terror and anguish in the face depicted on the coffin lid indicated that the coffin's original occupant was a tormented soul, and her spirit, evil spirit rather, was now loose in the world. So Stead and Murray then took this story that they created about this evil spirit in this coffin, and they sold it, or told it, I don't know if they sold it or told it or both, to eager newspaper reporters who then, as now, weren't about to let the truth get in the way of a sensationally good story. So the stories that were kind of compacted into one spread widely. And the priestess of Amun, princess of Amun-Ra, whatever you want to call her, came to be identified as the mummy whose mortal remains wreaked havoc wherever they were stored. So this story was floating around, and it made the leap from London, like it was kind of floating through the London social circles and, you know, newspaper circles and whatnot. And it made the leap to the Titanic after William Stead, one of the guys that created this story, went down with the ship on April 15th, 1912. Like, he was on board. Stead was traveling to America at President Taft's request to address a peace conference, and he took delight in telling his cursed mummy story to anyone who would listen on the Titanic. So, as you can imagine, you know, people are putting two and two together that this guy, William Stead, who told this story that many people believed about this cursed mummy, was on the ship and then went down. The ship went down, and he had brought the mummy on board, supposedly. You know, obviously that must mean that the ship was cursed by the mummy, right? So a few days after the Titanic sinking, one of the survivors recounted Stead's cursed mummy tale in an interview with the New York World. And eventually the ghost story that Stead and Marie invented, Stead's presence aboard the Titanic, and the reports of him having told all these people on the Titanic about the mummy story became all mixed together, producing this new legend about an actual mummy aboard the Titanic. The modified legend told of a cursed mummy sold to an American who naturally sought to ship it back home via the Titanic. And the presence of the cursed mummy, which had escalated at this point, the story had kind of spiraled into not just being this mummy that caused, you know, cups and saucers to break and making people sick, but had now become this mummy that sunk passenger liner ships like the Titanic. So people were starting to kind of circulate the fact that this could be why the Titanic sunk. Like, it wasn't an iceberg. It was this cursed mummy in the cargo hold. But as we know, there was never a mummy at all. Just a coffin lid. Like, this exhibit in the British Museum where this coffin is, it's only a lid. There's not the rest of it. And again, the coffin lid of the Priestess of Amun, Princess of Amun-Ra, is still in museum exhibits to this day. So even if by some crazy coincidence it was on board the Titanic in the cargo hold, just chilling down there, why wouldn't it be at the bottom of the ocean? You know, if the Titanic sunk and it obviously was not retrieved, why is it, you know, in museums to this day if it should be at the bottom of the ocean? So this myth is busted, even though it's kind of mysterious, and I love a good curse story. Definitely debunked. Another out there conspiracy theory regarding the Titanic is that it actually wasn't the Titanic that sank, but rather the Olympic, her sister ship. And I actually didn't know that there even was a sister ship before looking into this. I guess, like, maybe I'd seen things here and there, but I hadn't really, like, it hadn't registered with me that there was a sister ship called the Olympic. Let's start off by discussing how these ships have all around terrible luck. In 1911, the Olympic was involved in a maritime disaster of its own when it collided with the HMS Hawk. For some background, the RMS Olympic was a luxury liner operated by the White Star Line, just like the Titanic. She was the largest ocean liner in the world at the time of her launch in 1910 and was built with smaller design and safety features as the Titanic. So when the Titanic came in, it became the largest, but in 1910, the Olympic was the largest, and it was commanded by Captain Edward Smith, who would later captain the Titanic, and he kind of seems like the common denominator in both of these stories, like the destruction, but what do I know? On September 20th, 1911, the RMS Olympic collided with the British warship HMS Hawk. The Olympic had departed from Southampton and was en route to New York City, same as the Titanic, and the collision occurred when the Olympic made a turn in front of the HMS Hawk, and the suction created by the Olympic's large displacement caused the smaller Hawk to veer off course and crash into the Olympic's starboard side near the stern. So the same part that the iceberg struck, or, you know, the Titanic struck the iceberg on the starboard side. The Hawk, the smaller ship designed to ram and sink other ships, had a reinforced bow that inflicted significant damage to the Olympic, causing two large holes above and below the waterline. The damage to the Olympic was severe but not catastrophic. She managed to return to Southampton under her own power. So unlike the Titanic, she continued on, well, she turned right around and went back without issue. The incident resulted in a court case where the Royal Navy blamed the Olympic for the collision, while the White Star Line argued that the suction from the Olympic's movement was an unforeseeable accident. The Olympic was taken to a shipyard in Belfast for repairs, and as you would imagine, these repairs were extensive, costly, and time-consuming. And for that reason, I think the conspiracy emerged that the ship at the bottom of the ocean is actually the Olympic. The theory goes that while the Olympic was having its repairs done at the shipyard in Belfast, it was supposedly somehow swapped with the Titanic so that it could be deliberately sunk, allowing the White Star Line to collect the insurance money. So if you're putting together what's going on here, it's like, oh, the Olympic needed all of these repairs, and it was taken to this shipyard to be fixed, which was very costly, very time-consuming. So to kind of make things quicker and easier and for them to get the insurance money, they would just, you know, swap out the Titanic or the Olympic with the Titanic, or wait, how does it go? The Titanic, like, people are saying that it wasn't the Titanic that was sailing with all these passengers. It was the Olympic that, you know, was slightly smaller than the Titanic, but just as good supposedly, but it was defective because it had hit this other ship. So like it needed repairs. So theoretically the White Star liner took it and was like, we're going to use this one instead of the Titanic. Tell everyone it's the Titanic though. Say, you know, this is the Titanic. Here we go. But in order to get that insurance money and not have to pay out of pocket for the repairs, we'll just like pretend like it was the Titanic that sunk. You know, I don't know if you're putting together what I'm putting together, but yeah, it was deliberately sunk and it was not actually the Titanic. So that's a theory people have. But shocker, this theory doesn't stand up to scrutiny and common sense. For example, the insurance scam theory doesn't really add up because the Titanic cost $7.5 million to build back in the day, but it was only insured for $5 million, meaning even though they were swapping out the ships and whatnot, they actually would be losing money if the ship sunk. Like they were losing their investment, or like two-ish million, $2.5 million worth. Plus, although the two ships look alike, they were sisters, not twins, so there are a few noticeable differences between the ships that disprove this theory. Olympic's A deck was open, for example, while the forward half of the Titanic's A deck was enclosed, a feature that can be clearly seen in a recent 3D digital scan of the sunken ship. Further proof comes from the parts of each ship that were stamped with the hull number. Olympic's number was 400, while Titanic's was 401. The ship that now rests on the seafloor bears the number 401 on its repeller. So, that being said, it couldn't be the Olympic unless somehow all of these changes were made and, like, somehow, I don't know. There's just no way. In the end, there are a lot of swirling conspiracies about the Titanic, even to this day, because it kind of just feels or seems unfathomable that the highly advertised unsinkable ship, in fact, sunk. Like, they went through so much trouble to proclaim that this ship was unsinkable only for it to sink. Like, it just feels like there should be another explanation in there. And the truth that the Titanic's demise was caused by an iceberg just doesn't have the same Hollywood appeal as a rich man's vendetta, J.P. Morgan style, or a cursed mummy. Yet the facts don't lie. Whether we want to believe the expert opinions or the TikTok conspiracy theorists' notions of what caused the accident, the truth remains that the Titanic sits 13,000 feet underwater in the North Atlantic Ocean as we speak. And that, my friends, are a few Titanic conspiracy theories debunked by my lovely, intelligent, amazing researcher, Sarah Schilling. Love you, Sarah. Thank you so much for looking into all of the nitty-gritty details about each of these conspiracies. If you guys have any other conspiracy theories you want to send our way to debunk, certainly please do that. DM us, Found Objects Podcast, or my personal account, Katie Bellotti, and we will get to it. I love debunking things like this, and it's just really interesting. But it really does make sense that, like, you know, we're always, as humans, we're always looking for a reason, the why of it all, and you know, if a reason doesn't sit well with us, it doesn't feel like it could be the only explanation, we're going to go digging for answers. So that's why conspiracy theories are a thing. And I'm never going to stop being interested in them, even though I've kind of made it my mission to debunk them. So anyway, guys, thank you for listening to this episode of Found Objects Podcast. I hope you guys thought it was interesting, maybe learned something, and stay tuned for another new episode next Wednesday. We always post episodes on Wednesday. And remember, guys, things aren't always as they appear. Goodbye. This episode was produced, edited, and told by Katie Bellotti. Research by Sarah Schilling. Podcast artwork by Siri Devlin. Follow us on Instagram at Found Objects Podcast. Tune in next Wednesday for a new episode. Goodbye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.